प्रेमिन से कहो श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री हरि विरह श्री वासादि गौर भक्त वृंद की जय। श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गोपी श्याम सुंदर कुंद गिर गोपान की जय। श्री श्री वृंदावन धाम की जय। श्री श्री नवद्वीपताम की जय। श्री श्री मायापुरधाम की जय। श्री श्री मथुराधाम की जय। श्री श्री जगन्नाथपुरी धाम की जय। तुलसी देवी की जय। भक्ति देवी की जय। गंगा माया की जय। यमुना माया की जय। गौर प्रेम हरिनाम संकीर्तन की जय। श्री श्री ब्रीहात मृदंग की जय। ट्रांसेंडेंटल प्रसाद डिस्ट्रीब्यूशन की जय। श्री श्री गौर निताय की जय। श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय। श्री श्री विस्पन जत्रा की जय। समवेत भक्त वृंद की जय। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड ग्लोरीज। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड ग्लोरीज। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड ग्लोरीज। All glory to Sri Sri Guru Sri Gaura. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Narayanam Namaskrityam Naram Chayvam Narottamam Devim Saraswatim Vyasam Dutho Jayamudirayat Nasta praeshu bhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati utama shloke bhakti bhavati naishtiki. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam translations and purports by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. We're on the second canto, ninth chapter, text number 34. So we'll read this verse again quickly. And just read it through a few times. Or what? And we're just going to actually continue with the purports to this one because we just started to number 34. So I'll just read the verse again. Tetam yat patieta na pratieta chatmani tadvicharatmano mayam yatva soyatatamaha. So continuing on the purport, I'll read the verse again by Srila Prabhupada. O Brahma, whatever appears to be of any value, if it is without relation to me, has no reality. Know it as my illusory energy, that reflection which appears to be in darkness. Magena Timirandasa Garananjana Solakaya Chakurun Litam Jena Tasmai Sugar Vena Maha Sri Chaitana Manavistam Stakitam Yena Sutere Svayambhupa Kadam Ayambhurati Svaparatikam. So we're continuing in Srila Prabhupada's purport to the 34th text of the ninth chapter of the second canto. Misconceiving one thing for another is called illusion. For example, accepting a rope as a snake is illusion, but the rope is not false. The rope, as it exists in the front of the illusion person, is not at all false, but the acceptance is illusory. Therefore, the wrong conception of accepting this material manifestation as being divorced from the energy of the Lord is illusion. But it is not false. And this illusion, illusory conception, is called the reflection of the reality in the darkness of ignorance. Anything that appears as apparently not being, quote, produced out of my energy, end quote, is called Maya. The conception that the living entity is formless is that the Supreme Lord is formless, The conception that the living entity is formless or that the Supreme Lord is formless is also illusion. In the Bhagavad Gita 2.12, it is said by the Lord in the midst of the battlefield that the warrior standing in front of Arjuna himself, and even the Lord had all existed before. They were existing on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and they would all continue to be individual personalities in the future also, even after the annihilation of the present body, and even after being liberated from the bondage of material existence. In all circumstances, the Lord and the living entities are individual personalities, and the personal features of both the Lord and the living beings are never abolished. Only the influence of the illusory energy, the reflection of light in the darkness, can, by the mercy of the Lord, be removed. In the material world, the light of the sun is also not independent, nor is that of the moon. The real source of light is the Brahma Jyoti, which diffuses light from the transcendental body of the Lord. And the same light is reflected in varieties of light, the light of the sun, the light of the moon, the light of the fire, or the light of electricity. So the identity of the self as being unconnected with the Supreme Self, the Lord, is also illusion. And the false claim, "I am supreme," is the last illusory snare of the same Maya, or the external energy of the Lord. So once Prabhupada was explaining that the blue of the sky is actually a reflection of the body of the Lord. Sometimes it's asked, why is Krishna blue? And the answer to that Prabhupada once gave is, because he is. So the Supreme Lord is supremely independent in that respect. He always maintains his independence and his right to do anything and everything. Prabhupada says here, the last illusory snare of the same Maya is to think I am the Supreme. So this is the way in which the impersonal conception sometimes invades transcendental knowledge. The conception is that I am a bubble, and then I will merge into the sea, and I will become equal to the great oneness. So in these verses, in his purports, Prabhupada is making a distinction between the impersonal conception of the Supreme and the personal conception of the Supreme. I'm just going to read a very brief part of the purport in which Prabhupada quotes from the same verse. This verse is actually cited by Krishnadas Kaviraj in the first Adi Lila of the Chaitanya Chaitamrita, as it is in the very first chapter. So this is part of what Prabhupada comments. He says in the previous verse in the Absolute Truth, well, let me say here, when the material manifestation appears very wonderful, this is due to a perverted reflection of the Supreme Sunshine, the Absolute Truth, as confirmed in the Vedanta Sutra. Whatever one can see here has its substance in the Absolute. As darkness is situated far away from the sun, so the material world is also far away from the spiritual world. The Vedic literatures direct us not to be captivated by the dark regions, tama, but to try to reach the shining regions of the Absolute, Yoga Dhamma. The spiritual world is brightly illuminated, but the material world is wrapped in a darkness. In the material world, sunshine, moonshine, or different kinds of artificial light are required to dispel darkness, especially at night. For, by nature, the material world is dark. Therefore, the Supreme Lord has arranged for sunshine and moonshine. But in his abode, as described in Bhagavad Gita, there is no necessity for lighting by sunshine, moonshine, or electricity, because everything is effulgent. And in the beginning of this purport, Prabhupada describes how darkness does not exist independent of sunlight. For example, he gives the example, when you stand in the sun, you're facing the sun and you're immersed in the sunshine, but your back is in darkness. So there's a shadow or there's darkness, but that's actually a result of lack of sunlight. So the natural condition is brightness. That's described as the nature of the material world. And in this material world, of the spiritual world, in this material world, which is one-fourth of the whole creation, it is compared to a cloud in the beginning. And it is this cloud which is impregnated by the glance of Mahavishnu, which causes all the living entities to come out. Sarva yoni shukuntaya murtaya sambhavantiya tasham rama mahadunya aham bija pradapita. Krishna describes himself as the seed, aham bija pradapita, of all living entities, impregnating the material nature. So this material nature, as it is explained, is dark. It's not the natural, normal condition of the living entity to be enwrapped in darkness. And it is tamaguna. It is impossible to understand what this material world is. Therefore, it is said that people in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada quotes that verse, that in this Kali Yuga, people will be very deeply immersed in the deep, dark, dense darkness of illusion. And by the Srimad Bhagavatam, they will get light. Out of this Purana, they will get light. And for the first time, they will understand things as they are. So this is what the Bhagavatam is. Sometimes it's compared to a great beacon of light in the darkness. Otherwise, no one can find a way out of this darkness. But everybody is engaged in this energy. And it is said that if one doesn't engage in devotional service, we must, absolutely must be engaged in the external energy of the Lord. We must be, because no one, as Bhagavad Gita says, can act, can cease from acting even for a moment. One may try, it is not possible. Now, we understand from our study of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the meditation was actually possible in the Satya Yuga. People could live for 100,000 years and they could meditate for 70,000 years. It's described that Valmiki Muni was meditating for 40,000 years. And he was meditating such that vines and creepers grew all over his body. He was in such perfect meditation. That was the type of meditation that was possible to achieve in Satya Yuga. People could actually meditate so perfectly with such concentration, like Valmiki, that vines could grow over his whole body. Or sometimes it's said that an anthill grew up around him, like with Hiranyakashipu. So this is meditation. One becomes completely absorbed. And in the present age, it is not possible to meditate. But the Srimad Bhagavatam has mercifully entered our existence and give us some way to break this hard knot, grunta knot, of material existence. And it's also compared, the material existence, to the banyan tree. You don't know where it begins, you don't know where it ends. You've ever seen these banyan trees in India with many dozens of different roots, and they spread over many 100 meters or so. And you don't know which is the original trunk and which is a branch that came down from that trunk. So the material world is like this great knot of different forces that are all intertwined inextricably, and they're so complex that nobody can actually decipher what is the beginning and what is the end. And virtually no one can decipher or decide where to go or how to make sense of it. I remember when I was a small child, I used to have this kind of fantasy that because I felt unhappy, that this wasn't a normal condition, that there must be some other place where things were happy, where there wasn't difficulty, and that I was being put through some kind of a test. This was my little fantasy, and at some point I would be able to go back to this place after this rigorous test where things were happy and normal, and I wouldn't have to suffer. So this is the natural thing, to want to get out of this material world. But how to do it, we don't know. So Srimad Bhagavatam has come to us to give us step-by-step information, step-by-step. Material world, as we were describing, is padam, padam, yadi, padam. Each step is a danger. It's like we're going up a flight of stairs, one of them collapses. But Srimad Bhagavatam, unlike that, gives us practical step-by-step information how we can actually walk out of this material world. It's not a run exactly, or a rocket, but it's a progression. It's a step-by-step progression. We build a foundation, how to understand who I am, who is God, what is my position, what is my relationship to time, karma, what is nature, who am I, what is God. These are the five principles Prabhupada writes about in the introduction of Bhagavad Gita, the five main topics. So we begin to understand these things. And then we begin to understand the nature of creation, how it came into existence. We begin to understand how great souls, how they extricated themselves from this material world. We learn to understand what the different types of siddhas are, how we can obtain perfection. There's no perfection in the material world. Therefore, it's called the world of darkness. And as Krishna says, as Prabhupada quoted that verse in the beginning, and put it as the motto of Back to Godhead, where there is Godhead, there is always light. Where there is nations, there is darkness. So as long as there is not proper life in this material world, there is no way to get out. So another way we can understand how to do it is by following in the footsteps of the great souls, the great acharyas who have propounded the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam, and who by their lives have acted in such exemplary ways that we can actually follow in their footsteps. Another characteristic of this material world that makes it so difficult is that there are no proper leaders. As we were discussing yesterday, last night, we are looking for someone to please. This is our natural condition. But there is no one to please in any sphere. Ultimately, we become disenchanted or disillusioned or cynical or pessimistic about the material world because there's no one to follow. So Prabhupada was on a walk once and devotees were asking him about what is a good leader. And he said something to the effect that you must become a good leader, so people will follow you. So one devotee volunteered, so can we, what is the definition of a leader? And Prabhupada said, well, you say. So the devotee said, a leader means someone who will act in such a way that everyone will want to follow him, and everyone will want to do as he does. So then Prabhupada said, that's very good, say that again. So he asked the devotee to repeat, a leader is something, is a person who everyone will want to do as he does and follow him wherever he goes. So that is actually leadership. And only a devotee, because he has a sadhu who has no private life, is characterized by saintly qualities. Tiksha karuna pasudhuda sarvadehina ajata sattrava shanta sadhava sarvushna. He's very saintly. He's very tolerant. Tiksha karuna, he's very merciful. He's so merciful that even if he himself is in difficulty or an anxiety or in pain, if somebody comes to him and wants some advice or wants some help, he immediately helps. It's a great, great mercy. Most people, they're sick, they're tired, they're in a bad mood. Don't bother me, go away. But a sadhu, a saintly person, is constantly letting it flow, the mercy, the affection, the concern. He's so concerned. Lord Kapila says that anyone who treats others as different from himself, I will come to punish him like the blazing fire of death. So that's part of the sadhu's nature. He's paraduka dukhi. He's very compassionate. Tiksha karuna pasudhuda sarvadehinam. He's very friendly. He's the friend to everyone, just like Krishna. And ajata sattva shanta. He's very peaceful and he has no enemies. The sadhu has no enemies. So he's very kind. Krishna sends such persons. So we can see, we want to follow such people. Just like we hear tapes of Prabhupada so much and we see him sometimes in videos, or we hear about him from his people who associated with him. And we think, I want to be like that. I want to be like Prabhupada. If I could only be like that in every way. In every way. Not just the way he spoke or the way he walked or the way he translated or the way he taught, the way he became so devoted to Krishna, the way he took darshan. But everything we could think of, that is the Mahabhagavan, or a real sadhu. We want to follow such a person in every way. That means leader. That's the real leadership that will lead us out of this material world. We, as aspirants on the spiritual path, we're not satisfied. We want to get out. So we have to just like the child, he knows he can't go anywhere. It's not safe unless the father or mother takes the child, the boy or girl, by the hand. And sometimes it's so dangerous, just crossing the road, it's very dangerous. So the material world is very, very dangerous. And unless we have the expert guidance of a leader, we can't get out of this material world. So we're reading the lives of these great saints, how they got out of this material world. We were talking the other day about Maharaj Bharata and Jadbharat. Jadbharat was just so dissatisfied with this material world. He wouldn't speak to anybody. He didn't want to lose his meditation, not for one second. So even when they took him away to be killed, to sacrifice him as a useless, helpless person, he didn't protest. Because to him, to live or to die was non-different. There was that story of the great Muni who was always giving out benedictions to anyone. There were great Munis in the past who were very powerful. So when the prince came to him for benediction, he said, "You will live a long time. That is my benediction. And then you will die." And when the Brahmachari came to him, he said, "You're very good Krishna consciousness. So while you're very young and you're strong, and your body is strong, you can die immediately. That will be your benediction because you're meditating on Krishna." When the butcher went to him, he said, "You can neither live nor die because you will suffer in hell after you die and you're suffering in a hellish condition right now." And for the saintly person, he said, "It doesn't matter to you whether you live or die. So I have no benediction to give because you're going to be in blissful consciousness now and you're in blissful consciousness when you will pass away from this world." So the mind and the body of a saintly person is one of spiritual purity and one can follow at all times in any situation. Prabhupada, when he was in his last days, he was also teaching. He said to the devotees at one point, he said, "Don't think this won't happen to you." And in such an exemplary way, he passed away from this world chanting Hare Krishna, surrounded by chanting and living in the holy place of Vrindavan. So in birth and in death and throughout all life, such saintly persons lead lives that are exemplary. And we can learn from them. We can watch them. We can follow in every respect what a saintly person does. So in this way, Krishna is extending his mercy to us to take us out of the darkness and into the light. Sometimes these books there are called windows to the spiritual world. A window is something in which light comes in. So Krishna is the light and Maya is the darkness. And as we're learning from this verse, that Krishna is connected to everything. Aham sarvasya prabhavomata sarvaprabhajate. He says that I'm the source of everything. Everything spiritual and everything material. So even those who are grossly material or very envious of the Lord and are very expert at propounding their different atheistic philosophies, they, in the understanding of the transcendentalists, get all of their knowledge, all of their understanding, their ability to argue, that is also coming from Krishna. Just as the sky is blue from Krishna, the sun is getting its light and heat from Krishna. So one who argues that nescience is all, or that the material world is supreme, that there is no God, he's getting his intelligence also from Krishna, because Krishna is actually the source of everything. So in this way, even the atheist can come to the understanding that Krishna is the be-all and end-all. And one who is an aspiring transcendentalist can also begin to understand from the impersonal form of the Lord that there is a Lord. For example, Krishna in his impersonal form explains that the great bones of my body are the mountains and the hills. The great oceans and rivers are my navel. My eyes are the sun and the moon. And the different parts of my body are the different planetary systems. So this gives the impersonalist a beginning, a way to see that there is actually Krishna involved in everything. When I first became a devotee, I was reading some of these things, and I read in the Nectar of Devotion said that part of this universal form understanding was that the beautiful nature is the smile of Krishna. So I thought that was very nice. And just after I became a devotee, I went to this redwood forest that Prabhupada went to once in San Francisco. And I was, at the end, you go through this little exit place and there's a house and you sign your name if you like and you can write a comment. So these trees are very awesome in a sense. They're very big, big trees, 100, 200 feet high. And sort of overwhelming. So at the little book where you sign in your name to get on the mailing list, I wrote, and then it said comments, I wrote my name. And I said, Krishna's smile is everywhere. So I was thinking that I read this verse, that this is actually not the beautiful redwood forest, but it's Krishna's smile. And I felt very peaceful knowing there was a personality behind everything. Because actually there is. Nothing is divorced from personality. Krishna says, when he sees me everywhere and everything in me, to him I'm never lost, nor is he ever lost to me. So we try to cultivate this consciousness as devotees, don't we? That Krishna is everywhere, not only by his energy, but by his personality. He's there. One example Prabhupada gave is that when a person is at work, a man is in his office and he's working from morning till night, he's got a picture of his wife and children on his desk. Because he never forgets, even without the picture, that he's working very hard only for one purpose, to go home and enjoy with his family and his children, his home. This is why he's working very hard. Otherwise he doesn't want to work. It's very hard to sit and work all day. But he's being driven by that. So similarly, the transcendentalist is being driven. Everywhere he looks, he sees Krishna. The only reason that I exist, the only reason I'm doing anything, is because I have great love for Krishna. It's because I want Krishna to enjoy the result of my work. As we were reading in the 12th chapter, even if one can't 100% all life, all words, all thoughts, and all actions work, devote that to Krishna, at least he can, it says in the 12th chapter, he can perform his actions for Krishna. He can give the results of his work to Krishna. And that's very, very pleasing to Krishna. Because Krishna is the Bhoktaram Jagatapasam. He's the supreme enjoyer. And anyone who works knowing the results are going to Krishna, he'll be very satisfied. He'll be very satisfied. I know some devotees who work many, many, many hours, 12, 14, 15, 16, 17 hours a day. And they're giving lots of money to Krishna. They're very happy, very blissful devotees. Because they know that Krishna is being pleased. They're working for Krishna's pleasure, not for their own pleasure. So in whatever way we approach Krishna, he's happy. He's happy to know that we're recognizing that he's the source of everything. That everything we do, yad karoshi yad ashnasi, everything is done for him. And that makes him very happy. So these seed verses in the Srimad Bhagavatam are ways for which we can remember Krishna by seeing him everywhere and not seeing anything as being separated from Krishna. Only temporarily. We'll see this temporary material world and we see it's part of Krishna. We see it's the material world. It's also coming from him. It's coming and it's going. It's got its beginning and its end. But we also see that as part of Krishna. Because we are the conditioned souls and we want to become the lords. We are existing in this, what Prabhupada calls the final snare of illusory energy, thinking I am the supreme. He's giving us a facility to exploit. Even though it's not good for us. Prabhupada speaks on that original album. He says that we're trying very desperately. We're trying to exploit the resources of material nature. But what's happening? We're becoming more entangled in her complexities. But he gives us those material complexities to get entangled in, just so we can enjoy and experience that suffering so that we can become reformed and return back to our original condition of life. So Krishna's letting us enter into that cycle in which we can return to him through suffering. If we're very fortunate, we understand that this is not a good condition, and that we come back to the Supreme Lord. So I'll read another paragraph. The Vedanta Sutra is the very beginning. It affirms that everything is born from the Supreme. And thus, as explained in the previous verse, all individual living entities are born from the energy of the Supreme Living Being, the Personality of Godhead. Brahma himself was born from the energy of the Lord, and all other living entities are born from the energy of the Lord through the agency of Brahma. None of them has any existence without being dovetailed with the Supreme Lord. The independence of the individual living entity is not real independence, but is just a reflection of the real independence existing in the Supreme Being, the Lord. The false claim of supreme independence by the conditioned souls is illusion, and this conclusion is admitted in this verse. Persons with a poor fund of knowledge become illusioned, and therefore the so-called scientists, physiologists, empiric philosophers, etc., become dazzled by the glaring reflection of the sun, moon, electricity, etc., and deny the existence of the Supreme Lord, putting forward theories and different speculations about the creation, maintenance, and annihilation of everything material. The medical practitioner may deny the existence of the soul in the physiological bodily construction of an individual person, but he cannot give life to a dead body, even though all the mechanisms of the body exist even after death. The psychologist makes a serious study of the physiological conditions of the brain, as if the construction of the cerebral lump were the machine of the function of the mind, of the functioning mind. But in a dead body, the psychologist cannot bring back the function of the mind. These scientific studies of the cosmic manifestation or the bodily construction independent of the Supreme Lord are different reflective intellectual gymnastics only, but at the end they are all illusion and nothing more. All such advancement of science and knowledge in the present context of material civilization is but an action of the covering influence of the illusory energy. The illusory energy has two phases of existence, namely the covering influence and the throwing influence. By the throwing influence, the illusory energy throws the living entities into the darkness of ignorance, and by the covering influence, she covers the eyes of men with a poor fund of knowledge about the existence of the Supreme Person, who enlightened the Supreme Individual Living Entity, Brahma. The identity of Brahma with the Supreme Lord is never claimed herein, and therefore such a foolish claim by the man with a poor fund of knowledge is another display of the illusory energy of the Lord. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita that demoniac persons who deny the existence of the Lord are thrown more and more into the darkness of ignorance. And thus such demonic persons transmigrate life after life without any knowledge of the Supreme Personality of God. So there are many ways in which we become trapped in this material world. One of the ways in which we see how people are so deeply illusioned is in the environmental movement. Now I read somewhere that the Green Party is coming back in this country. It's making a comeback and it's going to become powerful again. But these solutions are actually political solutions. They're actually impossible because there's no spiritual knowledge. If we look at the situation, we can see that even though there are many, many summits and political parties, meetings of great and learned people, and billions of dollars and marks spent to try to clean the environment, as long as people have money, they have a way to produce things and pollute, and they will never give it up. I was reading the other day that there's a big fight over this Caspian Sea area, all these little countries around the Caspian Sea that belong to, they used to belong to Russia, like Azerbaijan. So in Azerbaijan, there's a big war between Azerbaijan and Armenia. You may have heard that one devotee who went to Azerbaijan was captured because they thought he was Armenian, and they were going to kill him. And the devotees, using the comm system, they sent many faxes to this president, Alchibey, and his life was saved at the last minute. Then we heard that this president Alchibey was overthrown by some Armenians that became powerful inside the country. And they made a revolution, and he was gone. But the real reason why this happened was the Americans were making contracts to get oil from Azerbaijan. And the Russians didn't want the Americans to gain economic ascendancy in this region. So they paid some Armenians to go in there and overthrow the president and change the whole regime so that they could extend their empire. That's what actually happened. That came out. That was the real truth of the matter. So even though there is some form of détente, easing of tensions, the rapprochement between the Russians and the Americans are trying to get oil out of all these countries. It's a very rich area. It's like the Gulf around the Caspian Sea. They call them littoral states. But the Russians are always making internally, quietly, revolutions to keep the Americans from being able to get a pipeline to go out from the Caspian Sea. So even though there is temporary peace, we can see that because these superpowers, Russia does not want to give up its domain, its dominion, its empire. It's trying to recreate it, actually. That these peaceful conditions are only temporary, at least unless Krishna consciousness becomes more predominant. If things go in their ordinary way in the material world, because people are so hungry after oil, they must have oil to run their cars and their factories, must have more oil. That even though some politicians may try to make peace, and some green movements may try to make the environment a little better, the thrust to enjoy more and more without any limit, which is the dark side of capitalism, we might say, but it's actually the thrust of the material world, then there can be no brakes put on this, no limitations, because the tendency to enjoy cannot be stopped. The only way it can be controlled is by spiritual consciousness, voluntarily. That there's some voluntary restraint. And voluntary restraint cannot be possible without param drishta, unless the consciousness can actually change. There is more selling of armaments now than there was during the Cold War. They're selling more. So maybe the American and Russian arsenals are not building up, but they're all selling to the other countries now. More. So there's more atomic weapons. I mean, they're just increasing. They haven't stopped because the Cold War has stopped. So instead of the situation becoming less dangerous, it's actually becoming more dangerous because there's more weapons. And there's more weapons in the hands of people who don't care what they do. They're terrorists. They don't care. Of course, nobody cares, but they care less even. So unless Krishna consciousness enters into the scene and the consciousness begins to change, there will be more factories and more pollution. The waters, the seas will become more polluted. The air will become more polluted. It can't be changed. The food will become more polluted. Because this is the power of material nature. Without the higher taste, without the change of consciousness, the atmosphere will become more dangerous. The tendency to fight and destroy so many millions of people will become more and more strong. So when we say the Bhagavatam is the light out of the way of darkness, we really mean that there's no other solution to anything. No political, economic, social, no solution. Nothing can be done unless Krishna consciousness is injected into this material world. So this is the special prerogative of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It can bring knowledge. Prabhupada said once, he said, it's not just theoretical. I looked this up once in the folio to see. Sometimes we think, well, sarva kama kṛta hoy, everything done by Krishna consciousness solves everything. So I wanted to see. That means that if the big problems of life, birth, death, disease, and old age are solved, then all other problems become solved. But I wanted to see how Prabhupada's how it's done. So, in looking this up in the folio, I found so many references, dozens and dozens, where Prabhupada would say, now I've come to the conclusion. It says no more theoretical, he said. It's practical. The Krishna consciousness will solve all the problems of life. He was flying once in a plane and looked down and saw so much land in America, and nobody's living there. They're all congested into these little, when you're looking from a plane, these little dots, all these millions of people, and there's huge expanse of land. And everybody's saying that there's not enough land. There's not enough food. But Prabhupada said the world can produce 10 times the food that can be eaten by this population. In other words, we could feed 10 times the people. And actually, that's a fact. It's a fact. It's not just fed to animals for slaughter. So this is practical benefit. Krishna consciousness, Srimad Bhagavatam brings life in the Kali Yuga. And by practicing and studying how it can happen, many wonderful institutions for Krishna consciousness, like the Bhaktivedanta Institute for one, and so many others, how to live on the land and protect the cows and harness the bulls and gradually develop an alternative varnashram lifestyle, so that we aren't artificially dependent on so many things can come. This, as time goes on, will be the practical way in which Krishna consciousness and Srimad Bhagavatam will manifest the potencies to change. Therefore, Prabhupada called it the Hare Krishna movement, didn't he? He didn't call it the Hare Krishna religion. Prabhupada used to say that religion without philosophy is sentiment. And sometimes he would say it's a science also. This is a science. It's not a sentiment. It's a science. It's a science and it's a movement. So movement means change. And change means transformation. And that transformation means to apply the practical principles. Utility is the principle of this Bhagavatam, so that the darkness of the material world can be transformed into spiritual light. There's a nice statement in one of Prabhupada's purports where he says, if the leading people of the world will only give 50% of their income, remember this quote, then this hell of pandemonium can be changed into the spiritual world. It says that this hell of pandemonium means chaos. If just the leading people of the world would give 50% of their income, this whole world would change. Just imagine if even just one very wealthy person is a billionaire, gave even half of his income, how much even one country could change. Just imagine. So this is how the spiritual energy can be engaged, how the material energy can be engaged in the spirit, in the service of the spiritual energy. So, I'll read the verse again in English. Actually, Prabhupada has a slightly different translation in the Srimad Bhagavatam, on the Chaitanya Chaitanya. What appears to be truth without me is certainly my illusory energy. For nothing can exist without me. It is like a reflection of real light in the shadows. For the light there are neither shadows nor reflections. And in Srimad Bhagavatam, he says, O Brahma, whatever appears to be of any value, if it is without relation to me, has no reality. Know it to be my illusory energy, that reflection which appears to be in darkness. So any questions or comments?
said in the scriptures how in the next heaven,
yes,
or a little more maybe, practically this world will change.
10, 20 years?
No, or maybe 50.
Well, one thing, of course, there's that statement in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, Navandas Thakur, which speaks of the 10,000-year period of Krishna consciousness in this Kali Yuga, like winter and summer. And in the Bhavishya Purana, it's also stated that people of light complexion will begin a worldwide movement for Krishna consciousness, which will persist for 10,000 years. And that was compared to summer in the middle of winter, that in this dense period of Kali Yuga, there would be a spiritual movement which would envelop the whole world. Prabhupada said once to the devotees that the children of your children will become pure devotees, or the children of your children's children will become pure devotees, indicating that in two or three generations, maybe 50, 60 years, 80 years, that there would be very powerful individuals on this planet who would propagate the Krishna consciousness movement. But sometimes devotees would try to ask him when the war would start. And Prabhupada would say things like, well, it could be 2 years, it could be 20 years. But you have to be prepared to die at any moment. When he was in New Mayapur once, he was saying that people in Kali Yuga, soon they will be living underground out of fear of atomic warfare. Of course, they're building big underground shelters in Switzerland, I think. So the whole population can go down there and live until the atomic bomb goes away. Of course, we can also understand that Krishna consciousness is spreading very rapidly, despite whatever the material conditions are. And if we can just look on a graph and see how it is growing, we see the graph is curved. It's an exponential graph. And so the predictions are very positive. And another thing Prabhupada said, that during Great War, we will be like the Red Cross. We will be ministering spiritual cures, spiritual remedies to all of the physical, psychological, emotional, mental difficulties that everyone experiences. Like in, for example, in Sarajevo, the devotees have been working very, very hard. I know many German devotees have been going to help them. And it's being in the middle of a terrible war, seeing people that have been either tortured or maimed or they've lost their limbs, and they're suffering very greatly. And the devotees are very respected in this region. So even in such adverse conditions, you see Krishna consciousness advances very quickly. So we will be like the doctors, the spiritual doctors. Every course, everyone is a spiritual casualty, but if there is war, when people suffer, they turn to spiritual things. Remember during the war, I know you don't remember, but during World War II, the churches were filled, especially with the women praying for their husbands and sons and fathers and brothers to come back from the war. And then after the war, the churches were empty again. Prabhupada also said once that if we can preach very vigorously all over the world, then we can prevent the world wars from coming. He said that once.
Like 10, 20 years,
What is going to be?
What is going to happen?
In Brahma Samhita?
In Bhagavad Samhita.
Hmm?
In Bhagavad Samhita?
Oh, Rigu Samhita.
Rigu.
There's some statements there. About the beginning of the Krishna consciousness movement spreading around the world in a very short time. Yeah. I don't know if you know the exact. Can you say?
No, I want to say like to his question that besides for 10-20 years, for a short period, like the Vedas, they are speaking for a long span of time.
Uh-huh.
But for a precise, like what will happen in 10 years,
I
what
see.
Will happen in next year, what is Brahma Samhita giving more clear?
Well, theoretically, it's possible to understand from the Bhrigu Samhita if one is very expert. And many have made opinions that there would be things like 1999 World War, and then Krishna consciousness becoming very, very prominent, and also predictions about ISKCON growing, and that ISKCON would take a turn in the year 1994. It would start becoming very clear of internal problems up to 1996 and then beyond. I've heard from different people who study the Bhrigu Samhita, I've heard there. But sometimes it's also difficult to actually understand to what extent we can take shelter of such things that we ourselves can't study because we don't know the Sanskrit or we don't have expert guides, astrologers. So, for example, I can just give one example. Once Prabhupada was asked in a class I was there, what do you think of astrology? And Prabhupada said, we don't care for astrology, we only care for Krishna. Of course, we know Prabhupada had his own astrologer, and he consulted astrologers. And we know, we also can sometimes constructively consult with the astrologers to determine marriage partners and so many things. Another time Prabhupada said, was asked, what about the lines in your hand? Can they determine the future? And he said, when you clap in the kirtan, Hare Krishna, all the lines in your hand are erased. And then we heard also that Prabhupada's astrologer said that if he passed through his 71st year or 75th year, he would live past mid-80s, past 85. But that didn't happen also. And of course, on the other side, his astrologer predicted that he would be a very prominent person who would have temples all over the world. So it's not that astrology is bogus. But the difficulty is that, first of all, it's very difficult to find expert astrologers who are really expert, who can really understand the Bhrigu Samhita and interpret it properly. And second, from some of these statements of Prabhupada, it appears that Krishna sometimes intervenes and changes the course of the history that's written in the stars and in the palms, because the Sankirtan movement has a certain transcendental nature to the normal course of events in history. Another time we've heard that to understand, to think of astrology is to compare it to the weather forecast. Sometimes the weather forecast is going to rain, but it doesn't rain. But still we take an umbrella as a precaution. Another time, I'm just giving you different things I know about how Prabhupada reacted. There was he came to San Francisco in 1967 because we invited him to come there. So while he was in California, I was in California, the devotees in New York, they were writing Prabhupada, please come back to New York. Because they were very sad that Prabhupada was away from them. So they were like, Swamiji, please come back. So Prabhupada came in, I'm trying to think the month he came. I think it was in April. I think he stayed from April to June, approximately, in that 1967. So Prabhupada wasn't coming. So they said, Prabhupada, the astrologers are predicting that there will be massive earthquakes on the west coast of the United States and that the whole of California will slide into the Pacific Ocean. So it's very dangerous for you to stay there. You should come back to New York. So Prabhupada wrote and he said, we don't care for such astrologers.
Yeah.
So I'm going to stay here in California. But he said, if we feel some tremors, then we will take precautions. So on the one hand, he was denying it. But he said that if there's some indication that there's some truth, then we will move away from here. Like that. And Prabhupada himself, every time the devotees try to get precise answers from him about this Brihasamhita predictions, he would never give them. So we don't really know for sure. At least I don't know personally. And I've not met so many expert astrologers that have made accurate predictions about these kinds of bigger things. But it may be true. Even if they're not, if they somehow can begin Krishna consciousness, then they will benefit. For example, when it is said that Lord Jesus Christ ate fishes and loaves in the desert, someone said, how is that possible? Of course, Prabhupada said, he can eat the whole universe, you can't compare yourself to him. But he also said that people of that region were unable to eat anything else. So they still had some benefit. They were following the teachings of Jesus Christ and they were eating the only thing available. Actually, Prabhupada even told some devotees that if they were in that situation. He wrote one letter to a devotee who was in prison once. He said, this was in America. The letter came that I can't eat anything. There's nothing to eat here. They won't give me anything to eat except meat. And he said, you can eat that meat and offer to Lord Shiva, and Krishna will protect you. And once he was making a little joke with Sri Vishnupada about Russia, and he said, Vishnupada said to him that there was only meat in these countries. He said that. He said, then if you have to eat meat, just go ahead with preach. Don't give up preaching. But of course, they didn't eat meat. The Prabhupada wanted to emphasize how important preaching was. Some one devotee actually died because he wasn't eating meat in a Soviet labor camp. And other devotees I know, they did eat meat because they didn't want to die and not be able to preach Krishna consciousness. So the first thing is to get people to somehow, first at least try to get them to hear the chanting and take some prasada. Then if a person has appreciation of Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada once said, even if he thinks, oh, these Hare Krishna people are very nice, he will advance. So he begins by hearing. He begins by hearing the Hare Krishna mantra, maybe seeing devotees, a little bit of Shraddha, a little bit of Sadhu Sangha. And then anything will be possible. It will be possible. And of course, if Krishna consciousness becomes a big world movement, we can supply anybody Krishna prasada. Is possible. In the Middle East, they're eating prasadam. So why not the Eskimos? We can bring packages. We can send the sweets there. And they'll never deteriorate in the cold. Sometimes people have dogs and cats, right? And they eat in the temple and they become vegetarian. Even dogs and cats, they're not supposed to eat vegetarian food. They don't have the right kind of digestive system. But they do. You can do it. So, otherwise, one becomes like an animal. We are all animals by nature, but by Krishna consciousness we can become pure. We can become pure. And it's also said in the Srimad Bhagavatam, doesn't it say that people of all races from every part of the world, from China, they will become devotees.
Should train the devotees, they should stop making Can you please speak how was the statement and what was it?
I'm not familiar with that. I don't know. We should stop making new devotees and train the existing devotees.
Yes.
I'm not familiar with that. Yeah.
Is it that the Monday
everyone will go back to Godhead?
Yeah, it's like one day all the fallen souls have gone back.
They may, but no, the material world. Yeah, the material world is eternal. It also exists for all time. There's always a material world, just like in a society, even in a very nice place like Singapore, where there's no crime. We say there's also a prison there. So there's always prisons in every country in this material world because some persons misuse their free will, and even though they have all facility do things properly and to live very happily as obedient citizens, there's a tendency to become criminal. The government doesn't want to spend millions and millions of marks and dollars on prisons. It's very dissatisfying for them to have to put money into just taking care of these prisoners. They don't agree with them and they have to spend so much. Krishna doesn't like to have to maintain the material world. He doesn't enjoy it. But because he gives freedom to the living entities to do what they want to do. Just like a parent sometimes lets a child do whatever he wants to do.
So where this always goes on, where are the souls coming from? Because the ones that have come back and
there's a cycle. They're always coming. Just like if you read in Chaitanya Chaitamrita, Vasudeva Dutt was very, very merciful. So humble that he wanted to take the sins of all the living entities on himself. And Lord Chaitanya was so pleased. Oh, you want the sins of everyone? He didn't want anyone else to suffer. He said, let me suffer and everyone else can go free. I'll take all the sin on myself. So Lord Chaitanya was so pleased. It stated that he did that. And the whole universe, he said, was liberated. We can't understand that. He said, the whole universe was liberated. What does that mean? Everybody all of a sudden went back to Godhead. But everybody, we still saw everybody on the planet, nobody disappeared. So maybe it means they were liberated when they died. Or maybe it means they were liberated in some future lifetimes. Somehow they were liberated. But the point is that the material world continues to exist. So there's always a flow of disobedient souls coming if everybody's liberated. There's always that continuum of mentality to disobey Krishna. So this is always that darkness, that mahatattva, that dark side of existence. So this is described as the ekapad vibhuti. The tripad vibhuti is the spiritual world, three quarters. It always exists. Like the winter, it will always come. The Kali Yuga keeps coming back and back. That's the nature of this universe. Now, I wasn't there for that quote, but there was one letter that Prabhupada wrote. It's not exactly, it's a different topic, but I thought it's worth mentioning. There's a directive Prabhupada gave in 1976, shortly before he left his body, for the GBCs. It was about America. And he said that in America, we shouldn't open any more temples now. In America, interesting. He said that now we should open only reading rooms and restaurants. And he said, this was a letter he gave to his secretary, who was Tamal Krishna Goswami at the time. And he said that if we open temples, people may not come. But if we open restaurants with reading rooms, then more people will come. And he said, then they will understand the cultural position of the Krishna consciousness. So the idea, he said, was that more people will come and they will become devotees. Of course, that was America for a particular time. But I thought it was interesting to mention how prasadam is so easy to assimilate. It's just very quick. And then they go to the reading room and then they go to the temple. That was Prabhupada's idea. There was also connected with that Prabhupada, this wasn't in the letter, but he did say at that time, he said that don't open any more temples. Just strengthen the existing temples. So So it's a little bit like your point. So just make the temples that you already have very strong. Don't open any new ones. Because at that time, the devotees were going too fast, and they weren't getting trained properly. So now I think we have some understanding there. The training is very, very important. If we expand quicker than we can train, then things can get very chaotic. Sometimes we notice this in this former Soviet Union. Because the devotees are very enthusiastic. They open over 100 temples. And we don't even know what some of those temples are. We don't even know the names of what city they're in. So we can imagine how little training there is. And you can see when you go there. There's a great enthusiasm, but there's not that much training. So obviously it's a very valuable point. I don't know much more about it. Obviously Prabhupada understood the value of training. That was the strongest emphasis I ever saw that he gave. The Prabhupada, he wanted restaurants right from the very beginning. When he came to San Francisco, when I was a new devotee, 1967, the very beginning, in January, there was one laundromat next door to the temple, and he used to tell the devotees, he said, you make that a restaurant. And he was giving an order. Of course, we were so spaced out that nobody did it. But he wanted it, definitely wanted it, right from the very beginning, right next to the temple, he wanted a restaurant. And even before there was a temple, he was writing letters to the Agarwals. Remember Mr. Agarwal? He stayed in Butler, Pennsylvania. He wrote them letters that you should open a restaurant here in New York. And he said, I will have a temple on the top floor, you will have a restaurant, you and your husband, Sally Agarwal. He wrote a very nice letter. And he said, even if we have to have cooks come from India, that's all right, we will do that. And you can make a very successful business. Because he saw that these people were a little business savvy. They were entrepreneurs. They could make money. And so he gave them that opportunity. So right from the beginning, Prabhupada wanted restaurants. He was always very keen. And he encouraged this very much. All through his time here, he wanted nice restaurants. In fact, Ambarish opened two or three restaurants, one in Hawaii, one in Boston, I think maybe one somewhere else, directly with Prabhupada's sanction. So here's a very man who had a lot of wealth compared to us, and yet Prabhupada encouraged him to invest in these restaurants. Detroit also. So Prabhupada once said, Krishna consciousness is realized through the tongue. If we can distribute prasadam, and I think now in Germany, Krishna has given some nice directions to make massive prasadam. Actually, I had one experience in New York when Krishna Prabhupada was there. They were making ladus in massive quantities of ladus. So I came to New York. It was in 1971, I think. And I had two very big suitcases. And I was taking a bus from the airport. I was struggling because of very heavy suitcases. I didn't know very much about traveling yet. And I was a long ways away from the temple. And this time the ladus were going out by the millions. And one car came up. I was waiting for the bus. And there was a man about 40 years old and his daughter. She was about 15 in the front seat. So he pulled over and he said, where are you going? And I said, I'm going to my temple. He said, oh, great. He said, why don't you get in? I'll take you there. And in New York, it's very dangerous because people can, you know, they can rob you if people live in cars. Very, very dangerous to go in, even in a car with somebody. But I thought, this is a young girl in the car. It must be his daughter. So it's probably, he looked okay. So I said, all right. So I got in the bag. And so they said, where's the temple? Where's your temple? And I said, it's in Brooklyn. It's in Henry Street. It's really a long way. I hope you don't mind. You really want to take me all that way? I said, yeah, yeah. I said, no, it's no problem. So I said, okay, that's really good. I said, did you ever go to the temple? He said, no. And I said, did you ever meet devotees? He said, no. So, okay. I couldn't figure it out exactly. I mean, I was dressed like a devotee, so he knew I was a devotee. And then he said, after a little while, I said, actually, it was my daughter that wanted to pick you up. I said, oh, really? And I said, yeah. He said, yeah. I said, well, why? Why was that? And he said, well, she just likes those candies you give out so much that she told me I had to stop and pick you up. And then she turned around to me and she said, those laddus are the best food on this planet. So good. I just love those laddus. Anyway, they took me all the way to the temple, and then, well, before we got there, you know, she had been talking to him somehow, and he said, I really appreciate what you people are doing. I really appreciate what you're doing. He didn't know anything. He'd never met a devotee. He'd never touched a book. He didn't know any philosophy. All he knew is that his daughter liked us, and she only liked us from the lotus. And he was saying, I really appreciate what you people are doing. I mean, I could have been a criminal for all he knew. Standing on the street with my suitcases with his young daughter in the front seat. I could have been. And New York is very, it's more dangerous to pick people up in the street than it is to go on your car. It's so dangerous. Nobody will do it. But he took the risk. So anyway, there's so many millions of stories about prasad, and you could go on for 10 hours and never finish, never repeat. But this was very successful. And If we pursue this, it will be very good for our movement, for sure. No question about it. Okay, thank you very much. Gantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Vispadan Jatra ki jai, Prasadam distribution ki jai.
Divine Guest Mughal Maharaj ki jai.